Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Monday, July 20th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
I'm Elodie.
Well, it was just a bloodbath in the gold market today, gold and silver market today, and pretty much it was not a lot of action anywhere else, but we certainly had a lot of action here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Everyone's taking advantage of these low prices, so gold's dropped, and they thought they'd get in at these levels. So we have gold down 29.30 right now on the day, 29.30 down almost 3% at 11.05. We have silver down 10 cents. At 14.84, most of the day though, silver was over 15. So silver fought back. Silver fought back today. Platinum was down 11 at 985, and yet palladium down 7 at $610. The USDX today was trading up and down. Right now, it's up 0.08. at 98.03. Crude oil was down 91. They took that down in the last hour trade. I was following it most of the day, and it was just hovering around 50. And we are now at 49.98, although it's not that much lower than 50. But it did break the 50 level. And you have the stock markets today. Not a lot of action there either. You have the Dow up 13 points. At 18,099, the NASDAQ up 8 at 52.18, S&P up 1 at 21.28, the 10-year yield still below the 240 at 2.37% for the yield, euro pressure on that, 108 on that, but, you know, at this time of the day, it's up 0.02 from the low, and not a lot of action in the European markets. You have the world, Japan and Hong Kong basically unchanged. London, Germany basically up a few points too. So most of the sectors are up. Electronic, technology, utilities, transportation, and energy minerals are down. Everything else is up. So corn is up. So let's see, corn is up. Gasoline is up. And really a mixed bag on the items that were up and down for the day. $20 gold pieces, we'll talk about them after the break. A little bit of pressure on those. they're still higher than your bullion coins. And again, if we go back to the January 2nd date, they're much higher. So we'll bring that to you right after the first break today. So a lot of action going on. Everyone is saying, why? And I say, because they can. And certainly there's not a whole lot that makes a lot of sense as to seeing these big pressures. There's certainly a lot of physical demand for gold and silver. And so whether this is perhaps maybe the, you know, just changes the sentiment a little bit when the Treasury puts unable to deliver for 3 weeks. You know, maybe that changed a little bit the sentiment for demand, from those that, aren't diehard understanders of the economy and what we expect to see here in the very near future. I know a lot of it's changed. You could point to the Iran agreement now. And as part of the reasons with a lot of oil coming on the market, putting pressure on oil. And
that's part of it, but the truth of the matter is, we talked, I think, last week, there was one report that pointed out it's going to take most of a year for Iran to...
Oh, it's going to take a lot longer. Yeah, but you get these knee-jerk...
Yeah, there's a little bit. There's a knee-jerk reaction. It's more psychological. There's not an extra billion barrels of oil on the market since this alleged agreement, and the agreement itself hasn't actually been approved yet.
It's true. But it's just... Who's going to stop it?
Well, we'll watch and see. We've got an article here
those
from...
Those Republicans? Are you kidding me?
You never know.
Yeah, okay.
But here's what's interesting about it. An article from the Washington Examiner. And this really is interesting, not merely from a political perspective, but from a constitutional perspective. The headline is, Kerry, UN has right to vote on Iran deal before Congress.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, this is interesting. And first off, the article itself is 248 words as originally written. And the word deal appears five times in that article, including once in the headline. All right? The word treaty doesn't appear once. Now, we're only reading from the Washington Examiner. I'm not reading a legal document. I'm reading a newspaper report. Still, it's very interesting that they don't use the word treaty, and I'll show you why as we get into this. The text of the article says Secretary of State John Kerry deflected bipartisan criticism of the Obama administration's move to make the Iran nuclear deal, or to take the Iran nuclear deal to the United Nations before the U.S. Congress. Now, they're talking about the House of Representatives here. Before the U.S. Congress has the opportunity to vote on it, saying the United Nations has a right to go first and to suggest otherwise was presumptuous. Interesting word choice. That's from Kerry. Obama had previously signed legislation that would give Congress 60 days to review and vote on the deal struck over Iran's nuclear program. Now think about this. Obama had previously signed legislation that would allow Congress 60 days to essentially vote on this deal. What's odd about that? What's odd about that is where the concept of treaty appears in the Constitution in three places, so far as I know. Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 says no state, meaning State of the Union, shall enter into any treaty. Okay, states can't individually negotiate treaties. Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2 says, the president shall have power, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, to make treaties, provided that two-thirds of the senators present concur. There is no proviso in the Constitution for Congress, that is to say the House of Representatives, to ratify or approve treaties. According to the Constitution, the only party that the president gets to negotiate treaties and the Senate gets to, they give them advice and consent and they have to concur with the treaty, they have to support it. Two-thirds of the Senate. Senators, not House of Representatives. We are dealing with something very strange here. this agreement coming, this deal, they keep using the word deal, at least in the Washington Examiner, this deal coming involving Iran is not being ratified in a constitutional sense by the Senate. Instead, Obama has signed legislation that allows the House of Representatives to have a say on what's going on here. Now, all by itself, that is just amazing to me. Is this a treaty, Melody? Senate's not signing it. Or maybe if they are, they're not the only ones. How is it that we have, what is the object of legislation to allow the House to exercise powers that, according to the Constitution, are reserved to the Senate?
Well, I don't know why this is any big surprise. I mean, obviously, we've got a bunch of traitors, Republicans coming out of there. I mean, we saw what they did with the TPP. Obama probably thinks he has more power with them than he does the Senate anymore. So, you know, he's going to where he knows or maybe perhaps already made arrangements to get it approved. He certainly wasn't going to change anything or write or sign legislation that would give Congress the 60 days to review and vote if he didn't know what the outcome was going to be. So, you know, whether
this is something other than a treaty, though, that's what I'm getting to.
I get that.
This is an agreement of some sort.
They change anything they want in order to get what they want.
Well, then it comes to where is the authority for this, for these deals? If it's not coming out of the Constitution, where is it coming from? Insofar as the Constitution applies to the states of the Union, where will these deals apply? Where are we going to be obligated to obey whatever the deal is? Will we be obligated in the Washington, in the District of Columbia, in the territories, in the states of the Union? You know, when government passes a law, the first thing anyone should ask is, where does the law apply? There's all kinds of laws. We pass laws every day. They don't apply in Canada. They don't apply in Uganda. Where do they apply? For example, do they apply in Washington, D.C., and they just bamboozle people into thinking, well, it must apply out here. They passed a law, and it must apply here in Texas. When maybe it only applies in Washington, D.C. There is something very strange happening here. There's no constitutional proviso for the House of Representatives to have any say in this deal. And that tells me this deal is not a treaty. All right. Again, I'm not a licensed attorney and so on, but I did run for the Supreme Court of Texas back in 1992. I've poked at the law enough to at least have a few opinions that are worth thinking about. Here's another one. Article 3, Section 2, Clause 1 of the Constitution. Article 3 is the judicial branch. And it says the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. Now, the word there refers back to United States. The word there is plural. It means they're referring to the several United States, that is to say the states of the Union. But there's no proviso for ratification or even approval by Congress. And yet when Obama obviously signed previously signed legislation to allow Congress 60 days to review and vote on the Iranian deal, what's happening here? Presumably, if Congress votes against the deal, it will be rendered void. But what exactly is this deal? Again, if it's not to be ratified by the Senate, but does require ratification or approval by the Congress, it's not a constitutional treaty, so what is it? And I'm going to dig into this. This is something that just appeared to me in the last, you know, couple hours before we did this program, hour or two. I haven't had a chance to dig into this with any depth, but this has got me talking to myself. There is something happening here. They are revealing something here that's important. And I'm willing to bet you that whatever is applying in this deal with Iran, same thing that's going on with the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
They're all connected, Al.
Of course they're connected. But the point is, how far back do we have to go to before we find a constitutionally ratified treaty? I mean, is this just now, this is the first time this has ever happened? Or has this been going on for several years or even decades? And virtually no one's picked up on it. What do they think they're doing? I mean, why do they even bother with the House of Representatives on this deal? Is it intended to bypass the Senate? I'm not sure if the Senate has even got a say in this thing. All they talk about is the House of Representatives, no constitutional foundation. All I'm saying, I don't know, I won't even say that's all I'm saying, but I am saying this. Something very strange is going on here. Something has been revealed here, and we're going to follow this and find out what the implications are over the course of the next days or weeks. But this is a fascinating and
probably most likely the reason is because, I mean, if my memory serves me properly, well, yeah. Let me think about it for a little bit. But, you know, you have 60 national security leaders, ambassadors, military, all of the elite, all the former cabinet members. They all signed a letter released today in support of this deal with Iran. You have Madeleine Albright, you know, who Brzezinski is, you know, former Kassebaum, Dashiell, Levin. George Mitchell, former defense official, Michelle Flournoy, or however you pronounce her name. I mean, you have all of these ambassadors to Israel, even the former ambassador to Israel, Russia, India, all the United Nations. I mean, they want this done. So it's going to get done. And
maybe.
They're doing whatever possible to do so that it will get done. And if anybody thinks that because our Constitution says, well, it can't get done, it's still going to get done.
It can get done. I'm not saying the Constitution says it can't get done. What I'm saying is the Constitution makes no proviso for the House of Representatives to approve, disapprove, or anything else. And what we're doing right now, Obama wants and Kerry, they want to take this to the UN. They may not do that, but they're arguing they should be able to take it to the UN first. And the idea is to build political pressure on Congress. They say, look, the UN is for it. Are you going to vote against it? The implication is they don't think they've got the votes in Congress.
Well, the White House is heavily lobbying Congress, and 60 days they have to do it. So, you know, I mean, you might have a little more faith in what goes on in Washington than I do, but certainly any of the agreements that they sign or do will certainly not benefit you and me.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, it would be almost if they actually pass a treaty, a deal, an agreement that actually works out some advantage to the American people.
Oh my!
Saying, what the hell went wrong here? Who's responsible for this? We're actually helping the American people. Right? Somebody's got to do that. Can't be allowed. We've got to do this for special interests, for the oligarchy, for the super rich. That's what this country is for.
So, you know, I saw other information. We talked about this previous on the program about all the money we'll be sending to Israel, all the other neighbors of Iran to help them build up their military complex and so forth. And it's like it's already so now Israel is holding out to see, well, gee, just how much can we get from them?
I understand.
So we're just paying everybody off so this can be done.
Exactly.
And so what is the importance? What really is underneath all of the why does this have to be done now?
In theory it's to prevent nuclear war or some sort of the use of nuclear weapons, but
that's hogwash. We could just go in there and bomb the daylights out of Iran.
Well, you know, I've been thinking about something else, and I will probably we'll save it until we come back. We'll take our commercial break in about 50 seconds, and when we come back, we'll start to talk about the monetary system and how the government might be able to cause significant inflation, a rise in prices, and a lowering in the purchasing power of the dollar. And it's not impossible. I won't guarantee, I'm certainly not going to say this is true, but it's not impossible that the deal in Iran may help to achieve that. And I'll try to explain how that is at least conceivable when we return after our commercials. I'm Alfred Ask here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to tell the listeners I did a quick comparison on Mint State 64 $20 gold pieces back on January 2nd. Spot price of gold was $11.90. Today we have $11.05, so significantly lower. Today, Mint State 64s, they're down. They came down. They didn't drop as much as gold did today, but they're still up 9% from the first of the year. Mint State 61 $20 Liberties, they're up 1.5% from the beginning of the year. So, yes, they took out some of the gains that they got last week with the deep drop in gold today, but since January, the 64 Saints are still up significantly, up 9% with an $85 drop in gold. So another example of what $20 gold pieces can help, can do to diversify your portfolio of gold and silver coins. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And with the pressure that we saw in gold today and over the past week or so, and even the past 2 years, you know, there's some folks that are beginning to give up. Although I didn't have any sellers today, none. I had one call where he thought he was reading a newsletter where he thought that perhaps he would buy some Swiss bonds. And I'm thinking to myself, well, why would anybody want to buy Swiss bonds? I'm not sure they're still at negative rates, but they're probably pretty close. And I wouldn't run to Swiss bonds as a safe haven. Now, I'm not a financial planner. I can't give you that advice. I'm just telling you what my opinion is. And I thought there was going to be a lot of bizarre offerings coming online as far as what you should do with your funds. So just think through before you make any decisions as far as, just ask, does it really make sense? And I don't know what the Swiss 10-year bonds are at, but it wasn't that long ago they were negative, and I don't think they've gone up that much since then.
Yeah, but they redeem them in chocolate.
Pardon?
They redeem them in chocolate. You might not get money.
Well, this is serious, Al.
I understand that, Melody, but you know, if you're going after paper right now, regardless, from my perspective, I mean, I'm just I have the point of view that I've had for years. Paper is dangerous and will ultimately lead to the destruction of your wealth. You want to store your wealth in something tangible. Chocolate is tangible.
As long as it's dark chocolate.
All right.
1-800-375-4188. If you do not want to redeem those bonds for chocolate and you want something that's real money, give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We got a caller, Tom, from Chicago.
Yes, yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Hello, Tom.
Yes, I'd just like to tell you my personal experience with gold down now $39 today. I followed Bob Chapman 100% when my wife and my portfolio was about $700,000. We followed his advice, went in to pay our IRA down to Roth IRA. We paid our taxes. Paid over $238,000 in our taxes. And following his advice, in one stock alone, we've lost $350,000. We're down to, from $700,000 after paying the government and everything, we have $70,000 left. I'm 70 years old. My wife is 68. It's been a disaster. You know, this has just been a absolute ruination of so many people. We can't retire. I'm working two jobs. And this is the worst I've ever seen.
What do you think your main what do you think was the major mistake that you made in your investments?
Following Bob Chapman, following his advice, which was get into the minors. And what I should have done is I lost very little, you know, in comparison. If I would have bought it at the $1,900 level to be in physical, I would never deal with that kind of stuff again. If anybody ever asked me, I'm so embarrassed to have lost all my money and my wife's money and following somebody that was just, you know, hawking the miners, and instead of saying diversify, 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 and stay in physical, not in the miners. That was a disaster.
That was the mistake, in my opinion, was putting, you know, and it's the kind of mistake everyone can be making right now. We don't know when other people who are in stocks, for example, or bonds are going to see a similar kind of event. But from my perspective, when you think you have wealth that's stored in the form of a piece of paper, you are making a fundamental mistake. That paper is just a promise to pay. And we live in a world where everybody's made these promises and nobody can keep them. And sooner or later, those promises are going to blow up. And when they do, they're going to be people holding paper are going to suffer significant losses.
We let him buy the stocks that we were supposed to be in. The one stock, I bought it about 70 cents. It went to about $1.80. I wanted to sell out. I didn't. He said, stay in. It's worth 0.09, less than one penny.
Well, you know what? You know, hindsight is everything, too. And I know at the time.
There was a $40 stock. He was telling me it was a $40 stock. Yeah. So, you know, and he's a 50-year guy in the market. So, I'm going to trust him. Yeah. And he was on 100 radio shows a week. So, a lot of people must be in the same boat that I'm in. That's what I think.
Well, you know what? A lot of people believe that when they buy the miners that they're buying gold, and you are not. You are buying a corporation. You are buying something that is run by man and humans, and there's a lot of room, especially in mining companies, to distort. No one really knows sometimes what's exactly in those mines and what they can and what they have on hand and so forth. So there is a lot of distortions when you come to paper, but particularly the miners. And you know, I argued with a lot of folks. A lot of folks didn't go that way. Instead of putting it into the miners, they did put it into physical. And yes, we've been beaten down too, but it's never going to go to zero. You're not going to lose everything on the deal. And so folks, please, the listeners, please, if you own miners, don't believe that you own gold. Two different things. Even the ETFs. Yes, I know they're supposed to be backed by some gold, but they've never been audited. And there's tons of reports and saying that they don't have the gold. I have a tendency to believe
you'd be better off in ETFs and some of these individual companies.
But the thing of it is, it's still paper, and you don't own gold. My point was, if you own the ETFs, you still don't own gold. You do not own physical gold.
So
don't make the mistake. Don't make the mistake of thinking that you do. And I'm sorry that...
Well, the thing is now, if you're in a position like we're in, we have to stay in these things. And, you know, if you get out, you know, with our luck, doggone things going to go up again. You know what I mean? So You can't, with the stock market so oversold, you could never get out of those positions. You have to stay right where you're at, and it's really grinding, especially in a day like today. You know,
sometimes I think that's also a mindset, and I do understand. Don't think that you can't do anything. And sometimes by not doing something, you never get out of the hole that you're in.
I was buying physical, you know, and I found nothing. I was buying 40% silver. Look where silver is. Silver is only at about $14, maybe a little less now. It's unbelievable.
Does anybody follow my advice at all? 80% gold, 20% silver? And this is why you don't want to have heavy loads of silver
because of
the volatility.
You can't even buy an ounce. You can't even buy an ounce with the money that we have now. It's just that we just try to stay in that market to try to see if the thing would turn around. But it's got to go up from here. It can't go much lower. But they're talking $950 for silver, for gold.
Well, you know, if I'm correct, and I'm the Tanzania, the Jim Sinclair's, I know he's having problems too. I think because the shares went so low, and I agree with you. I think if these shares have hit rock, I wouldn't be buying them just because they're rock bottom. But if you own them,
the thing is, what you have to do at this point, and it's terrible, and it just makes you want to throw up to think about it. You have
if they start moving up, people hold out thinking that they're always going to go higher, and they don't sell. So just guard yourself.
If I could get 50% of my money back, I would do it. I mean, when you're down 99% in some of the stocks that were. So it's like unbelievable. But anyway, thank you so much for taking my call, and always emphasize the fact that don't have counterparty risk. Stay out of that and stay in something that has intrinsic value.
Thank you, Tom. We appreciate your call. We are sorry to hear of your dilemma, but we are really grateful that you had enough nerve. There's a lot of people who could tell us the same story or a similar story, and they don't want to make those admissions in public. And you really not just... You're helping people out there, Tom. I appreciate it. I appreciate your call.
I sure hope so. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tom.
Bye-bye.
You know, when Tom is talking about you have to avoid the counterparty risk, What does that mean, Melody?
Well, why don't you tell us, Al?
It means paper. That's what it means. It's
Absolutely.
Just a fancy word for paper. I have a piece of paper. I signed my name on it. I'm going to give it to you. You hold on to it as if it was worth 100 ounces of gold because I signed my name to it. If something happens to me, that paper is worthless. And it might be worthless if I didn't have the 100 ounces of gold to begin with. Right? Counterparty risk just means paper, paper, paper. Somebody, you're taking somebody's signature, you're accepting their promise rather than a payment. And we've talked about this for, several years on this program. I'm just saying, look, the paper is going to bite. Sooner or later, you stick with that paper. I have to admit that the problems that I have anticipated with paper haven't occurred to the extent that I would have expected to occur by now. Right? It's a slow process. It always takes longer than you think it's going to take, but regardless, it's like juggling little vials of nitroglycerin. You understand? Oh, yeah, this is a good act. We're going to make it on America's Got Talent. I'm going to juggle vials of nitroglycerin. Well, that's great. That's an exciting act and the rest of that sort of thing. You might get first place, but you keep juggling vials of nitroglycerin, and one of these days, you're going to need a new shine for your shoes because they're going to be badly affected when that vial hits the ground. Vial in this analogy, from my perspective, is paper. And you look around, and it goes to the whole idea of the national debt. Government admits $18 trillion. Other people are claiming it's over $200 trillion. That debt can't be paid. All the promises that are inherent in that debt. Oh, yeah, we're going to take care of your pension and yours and Social Security. And we've got entitlements for you, and we got subsidies for you and free lunches. And, boy, we promised to give. They can't keep all the promises. I don't know which ones are going to go first, and I don't know when they're going to go. But if you're relying on those paper promises, you're going. The debt can't be paid. The promises can't be kept. So, Tom's story is an illustration of the, there's sense. Even with gold is down 30 bucks today. All right, that's no fun. All right. But on the other hand, it doesn't change how many ounces of gold I have. I've got the same number of ounces I had yesterday. It's affected if I had to sell what I have all at once. Well, that would be a bad situation. I wouldn't like to sell it at this price. But nevertheless, all right, price is down. I still have it. And I can reasonably expect that the price is going to go back up, although how soon? We'll watch and see.
Everybody talks about paper. When you look at the stock market, it just keeps hovering at that 18,000. Mm-hmm. Well, the margin debt, the money that's, the reason it's high is you have all these corporations that are borrowing money at low interest rates and they're buying back their shares. Mm-hmm. These leverage accounts, these margin levels have never been so high. The closest that it was back in 2007. And we saw what the markets did. So for them to continue, if they increase the rates, well, how much more are they going to continue to borrow? Is it going to be cost effective for them to continue to borrowing to buy back their own shares in order to keep the prices high? The participation rate in these markets, it's at the lowest levels for such high numbers. It's low level of participation rate to have these stock markets at these high levels. And again, we've never seen this type of difference spreads ever in history. So again,
tells us we're unstable and dangerous times.
Absolutely.
And if the danger manifests, it'll be one of the reasons why the paper debt instruments become worthless. It'll trigger that, and it'll be a time when all of a sudden people are going to say, oh, my God, thank God I've got some gold coins.
The price-to-earnings ratios, they're hitting all-time highs. The normal runs around 16. Now they're selling at 27. So, again, we see all the same repeat signs mm-hmm. that we had for every stock market crash. So how long are you going to wait before you get out of some of that paper and get it protected for something that's real?
Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
A heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival.
You know, Al, before going into the break, we were talking about the stock market. And today, federal regulators, they're directing 8 of U.S. banks to hold capital at levels above industry requirements.
Yep.
And, of course, that's a cushion against unexpected losses. So they're expecting losses and to reduce the chances of future taxpayer bailouts. The Federal Reserve's action came today. Monday's means the 8 banks together will be required to shore up their financial bases with about $200 billion in additional capital. The requirements also are aimed at encouraging the Wall Street mega banks to shrink so they pose less risk to the financial system. So certainly that's telling me that the financial system certainly cannot withstand any exposure to anything that's coming our way, and they're looking for these banks to shore up, to help anyway. I certainly don't think $200 billion is enough in additional capital to cover the losses that we actually are facing and probably will help. But it currently falls about $12.5 billion short. So they're already short $12.5 billion. So, you know, it's they can be told what to do, but I'm not sure what will happen if they don't follow through with it, because it's not a requirement. They're asking them, they're directing them to do it, but it's not legally a requirement. But it tells us once again there's something that's coming, and
in
it's coming
wind.
Very soon.
Yeah, that's the implication. We're going to see some significant trouble, significant dislocation, and what do you want to have at that time? Promise to pay or a payment? Yeah, that's just where it comes down to. It's not, you know, you can't sit here and say, huh, go ahead and invest in gold and you'll live happily ever after. It's not that simple. But you might live a whole bunch better than the people who are investing in paper debt instruments. Worst comes to worst, that gold is going to be worth something, just like Tom said. It could be, you could see a significant decline, but you're going to see a terrible decline in the paper. And if you're going to hang on to paper, you are at risk. And if you're listening to a program like this one, this isn't the only program you listen to. You listen to others. You read articles that are on the internet every day. You follow the news, and you know that there is at least a strong suspicion that something significant is going to happen in September or October. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. We don't know that. I certainly don't know it. But there's a lot of people who are intelligent and knowledgeable, and they're saying September, October, something's up. Right? Where do you want to be when you get to September, October? You know, it's the sort of thing where you could have yourself enough food stored up for 2 years. And people say, that's foolish. Put all that food down in your basement. You got 2 years' supply of food. Well, coming into September, October, it might be foolish. It might turn out you don't need that food. But what if you do? And where is the harm in having it? Huh? It's the same thing with gold and silver. All right, maybe not. We just skate right through September, October. We get on up to December and Christmas and so on. Could be everything's going to work out, but everybody looking at this knows it is a house of cards. If you listen to this program, you listen to others like it, you read articles, you know the whole system is like a house of cards. Nobody can tell you when the house of cards is going to collapse, but everybody knows it can't last forever. Like fiat currencies, average life, depending on who you listen to, maybe 70 years. Average life for fiat currencies, some say less. Right? We have a fiat currency. How long is it going to last? We've had a pure fiat currency since 1971. At 44 years, something like that, 44 years of a pure fiat currency, we are now in the area in the timeline where typically they cease to exist. Huh? What are you going to do if you have a piece of paper? And you have it denominated. Look, I've got my pension fund. It's right here. I have a piece of paper. It's got a signature and even a fancy stamp. It looks very official. We can trust these people because they've got a stamp. And they sign and they wear suits and ties. And they're all very honorable. You have to look for yourself and make up your own mind. Because in the final analysis, no one is going to protect you. No mortal is going to protect you other than yourself.
Hmm? Here's an interesting article also in this, you know, September. Everybody's talking about September. This happened September 8th, but the IMF is planning to name White House economic advisor Maurice Obstfeld as its chief economist. He's on leave from the University of California, Berkeley, and he's replacing the retiring guy. But what's interesting about this guy is he wrote two books on international economics, one with a Nobel Prize winner and the other one with Paul Krugman. And we talk about Paul Krugman a lot on this program. And but this person, this Obstfeld, is known around the globe for his work on international economics and is considered one of the most influential macroeconomists in the world. And he's also... when he wrote a paper warning about the euro when it was unveiled in 1999, that the single currency is a gamble that can be won in the long run only if it overcomes the existing political environment to force fundamental fiscal and labor market reforms in its member states. My point is, here you have a guy that's a White House economist right now, an advisor. He's moving over to the IMF, and his specialty is international economics and understanding and warning about the euro. And I think, you know, we were going to talk, I don't know if we have time, about Iran and the TPP, the trade agreement. And what if this was needed so bad in order to create a zone to compete against China and Russia, India, the BRICS nation, and their international bank that has been gaining so much support from various countries? It is like almost you have the U.S. and these other countries that are trying to trying to create their own group of nations. And
why are they doing that?
Because they're all failing. But
no, because they look at us and they think the nations that are here and that are running the situation, they're saying that's a house of cards.
Absolutely.
We're going to get off in our own situation. These guys are going down. That's why they're doing it. If they thought the United States and England and Europe and the rest of that was solid, they'd be signing on.
I wasn't talking about those countries. I was talking about what the U.S. and the Europe and with the agreement with Iran and the trade agreements with those Asian countries and so forth. It is like they're trying to create their own some sort of existence. And, perhaps the Saudis, maybe they do have peak oil. Maybe that is really true. And so now they need to go somewhere to replace that. So there are all kinds of scenarios. But I did think this was interesting enough to bring it to the program to see his experience. And I think with his experience, maybe is something that can, maybe open the window a little bit to what we...
You're talking about Tom's experience right now. Yeah. Is that true?
Well, no, the experience of this economist that's joined the IMF.
He said he recognizes that the European Union isn't going to work. Essentially, I don't know if you used the word forced. I think maybe you did. But essentially, they have to compel a change in culture and boundaries and nationalism. And they got to do a bunch of things. And they have to do this. And people aren't going to voluntarily give that up. Right? They may be a little bit indifferent to it. They may not fight for it. But under push and shove circumstances, all of a sudden it's going to be the Germans versus the French. They've been there before, and they'll go there again if they have to. All right? We get them all sit down, play nice, well, as long as there's a nice big pie and everybody gets a slice. But at the point in time when they find out, there's not enough pie to go around, guess what? At that point in time, ancient antagonisms and rivalries will come to the surface, and the only way you'll avoid it is by forcing these people into a measure of conformity. That means something like a police state. And for his notions on economics, if he is implicitly in favor of use of force in order to make something like the European Union hold together, then I don't know that this is the guy I want to listen to.
Sure. I'm not saying he's a good guy to be joining the IMF. I'm not saying that by any means. I'm just saying it opens a window to see perhaps what direction this is really headed, to the completion of a global order and the new world order. No, it's not, but I think his experience and his background, that they're looking for someone like that to be able to complete it, was my point. Not that I'm for it or that he's good to have around.
I get that. I follow, but I'm just saying, if this guy is interested, if his economic theories lead him to believe that people have to be forced to accept a new monetary system, a new political system, then this is a dangerous man.
Absolutely.
He's not merely relying on persuasion. He said, look, this is the right thing to do. This is the thing that will make most people most prosperous. He's saying, I don't care what you idiots want. You're going to do what me and people like me say. And I guarantee you that is going to drive a bunch of the idiots to the point where they're going to lock and load and say, oh, we'll see about that, Mr. Economist. We're going to put you get your PhD from Harvard, you go ahead and put that up against the GED from the guys who graduated from eighth grade, but have a rifle. Right? There's people in this world who won't necessarily believe something just because it comes from an economist. We've got about 4 minutes left, Melody. We don't have enough to get into my grand unifying theory, all right, on why the government could, why and how the government could precipitate inflation. We're going to have to save that for perhaps tomorrow. But I just want, to talk about the premises here, at least to some degree.
Let's talk a little bit about, because they play a big part of China. how they're building a super city. That's pretty quick. And, you know, they're building, molding a super city around Beijing.
Yeah, I know. It's almost too fantastic to believe. Got two articles to touch on it. One is, despite waging a war on pollution, China's air is still really filthy. And they are talking about nearly 75% of the major cities in China had air pollution levels above national air quality standard. And you can bet where the air quality standard in China is. It would be like California used to be on a bad day. All right, it's got to be. I mean, their standards are not going to be our standards, but they've had terrible problems with air pollution. And now they are planning to create a super city. Here's the New York Times. As Beijing becomes a super city, rapid growth brings pain. And what they're talking about, they are planning to develop a megalopolis that will contain more than 130 million people surrounding Beijing. All right? That's 40% of the population of the United States in one giant city. They claim the city will ultimately be about the size of Kansas. You understand that? A city the size of Kansas. It would take you days to walk out of that city. I mean, you can walk out of virtually any city in the United States in a day's time, in several hours or a day's time. It will take you days or weeks to walk out of this megalopolis that they're planning for China. 130 million people crammed into a single city about the size of Kansas. This is a great economic experiment. They say at part the planned megalopolis, a metropolitan area that would be about six times the size of New York, is meant to revamp northern China's economy and become a laboratory for modern urban growth. You know what that means, Melody?
Yes.
I don't want to live in a Chinese laboratory.
Hmm.
All right, call me old fashioned, but I don't want to live in an American laboratory. All right, because I know who they keep in the laboratory. The operators, they go home at night. The people who operate the laboratory, they go home at night. The ones that live in the laboratory are the lab rats and the animals that are being experimented on, and that's what they're trying for China. It's one of those things where you just sit back and say, oh my God, they've already got more pollution than they can handle, and they are going to try to create a single giant city the size of Kansas that houses 130 million people, and they're what? They're going to eliminate pollution that way? It's possible. It's possible that if they put in the right transportation and nobody has a car in all of the Kansas-sized city, nobody has a car, you're going to use the elevated trains or subways or whatever it is, public transportation, and all of the heat and air conditioning for the buildings and whatever is handled in a way to minimize pollution. It might be that they can minimize pollution, but I'm just thinking, my God, would you want to live in a single urban environment the size of Kansas? Would anybody want to do that? That sounds like an extraordinary situation, but that's what they're planning for China, which just gives me more reason to sit back and say, this system is just hanging together, just barely. And sooner or later, the whole thing's going up for grabs. And when it does, I hope I have some gold at the time. We are out of time. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. Thank you all for listening. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, Lord willing, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.